This ceremony was officiated by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Welcome. Welcome to family and friends, and to you, Sangha of Brooklyn. This morning, instead of a usual Dharma talk, there'll be a Jukai ceremony where three people, Ajay, Holly, and Lou, will be receiving the Bodhisattva precepts. And you will be also participating, witnessing. You're not taking vows, but you'll be participating in them, bearing witness and supporting the vows of those who are taking Jukai. And it makes me very happy that we are doing this in Brooklyn. I'm really happy to be doing this here with you. These folks have been working with these precepts for a while in their training, for a few years as students. And this past week, they've been in training here at the temple, working with Kaishin, who's the sewing mentor, sewing their Buddha robe, their garment called a roksu. You see some folks wearing those black roksus, which my teacher, Daidaroshi, said was a shingle that said, "At your service." So at the very beginning, Buddha made clear, very clear, that morality is an essential part of the Eightfold Path of liberation, but that we are intrinsically moral beings, and that this moral aspect is deeply embedded in us. It's in our gut, that we know how to act. We know how to act in goodness and can experience the world in terms of what is skillful and what is not skillful. We know this. We know what is destructive. We know what is negative. We know what is binding. We know what is negating of life and what's affirming of life, what's positive and generous for all of life. We know how to act of benefit. Now, this may be clouded over, but intrinsically, Buddha said, we know. We do know. And when we practice, when we have a path of practice, we are more clearly able to see what is binding us that has never been bound, what closes our heart, what opens our heart, allows us to touch our open-heartedness, and what is then beneficial towards the path of liberation. And if we can do it in our own home, then it's a lot easier to do it for others. Self and other is one. So from the onset, there's been a very clear establishment of moral teachings and practices that are part of our Buddhist tradition. And today you will bear witness and probably benefit as well by this particular form of precepts that comes down to us here, the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. These precepts are not taken, they are given, they are granted, and they are received. Ju means receiving, granting, to open a space within the core of our being to what is natural and true. And Kai is the precepts, the guidelines that point us to our naturally way of being of benefit of all, for all of us. And the precepts are created to function in the world of differences, in the world of this and that that we live in, the world of good and evil. I received these from my teacher, and I will be granting them to these three recipients. At the base, they are the definition of the way of a Buddha, a realized selfless being who lives in the world of differences with care. And of course, in the beginning, precepts are taken on faith because we're in a process of revealing our Buddha nature to ourselves. You hear the word bodhisattva a lot, is a person who is on a path of enlightenment and is dedicated and dedicating their life to their own well-being and to the well-being of others, to see what's real and true. And they are receiving that from others as well. As my teacher used to say, if you want to save life, we have to be prepared to also be saved. So this becomes the driving force in one's life, of having a path of the expressing the radiance of being a human being and the deepest intention to be of benefit, be a bodhisattva. So how do we do this? Most of us want to live lives that are good and meaningful with happiness. We want to have beneficial effects on others, don't we? We live in a world that is in distress. How do we, as practitioners of the Buddha's Dharma, or how does any noble being, any one of us, we're part of a human race, how do we be of benefit? So this ceremony is a passage, an initiation for those students who up to, in their practice up to this point, chose this direction. It's a continuation of practice. It's the beginning of something new. But as we know in life, and especially in Buddhist practice, there is no finish line. This thing's rolling on and on and on. No gold medals. We get a couple certificates and roksus, but we spend the rest of our lives living into what this is, how to save all beings. And they're based in selflessness. That's at the base. The fundamental nature of all things is without an abiding, permanent self. And this is seen and realized in practice. And we may know it and actually feel it, because that is us, but it keeps coming in more and more true. That bell keeps ringing from within. And so rather than leading to indifference and not caring, because there's nothing permanent, where the bodhisattva path is, the Buddha way is a path of impermanence, is entering impermanence. So rather than it being about indifference and not caring, that's another construct. This realization makes it an imperative that we're living a compassionate life. It can't be other, because we see we're totally connected. Totally connected. We're a diamond net, interwoven. One reality with a lot of differences. Right? So we'll go through the precepts themselves in this Jukai ceremony, and they will be making vows. And many of us have made vows in our life, so you can probably relate to the power of a vow. It offers us a direction, a clear direction in our life. It's a bundle of very focused energy. I vow. How many of you have made vows, right? In different ways. Some are positive vows, Some of us may have vowed to something that is not very helpful. So vows can change as well. They can shift. But they speak to something larger in this sense, a force of a deep commitment to see something through, no matter the obstacles. And as vow that gives direction with the body, with our mouth, and with our thought. And we are asked to continually return to them over and over again, right? So if you got married and made vows, don't you have to return to them over and over again? What did I vow? Remind ourselves, right? And see if that direction is clear. Because if we do a vow, make a vow, and we just say it with words or think it with ideas, we have to merge the head and the body and let it entwine us with the teachings, which then becomes our path. They become verified. And the strength will emerge from our own life circumstances, our own unique life circumstances. So the vows of the precepts are what each recipient will make to these specific teachings. So I will be walking us through the ceremony as we go through it. And now the Jisha will bring them forward. And they'll be first starting off with three sets of bows. And as you see, the main altar has been closed, and we're establishing the main altar right here in the center of the Zendo. So their first set of bows will be to the Buddha, to acknowledge our original teacher, complete identity with Shakyamuni as their life. So the altar will close after these three full bows to the Buddha. The Buddha and the self become one reality, just like we bow to one another in the Zendo, rising from our Bodhi mind, identifying with having awoken, recognizing this interdependency. None of us have arrived here on our own. The second set of bows is to their parents, bowing in the direction where they live or where they are buried. If their parents were here, they would bow directly to them. And this bow is acknowledging and identifying with our blood lineage, our family, back successive generations. Expressing our gratitude to our genetic ancestry. A simple recognition that we have received what we needed in this life up to this point, to bring that very up close. So it's not abstract or distant, no matter what the circumstances were with one's parents. And this third set of vows will be to their teacher, Kaishi, the precepts teacher, which today is myself, representing the lineage of ancestors who have been handing down the precepts, mind to mind, generation to generation, down to this place here in Brooklyn. We do get tangled up in each other's lives. So the practice of a bodhisattva is to make that a good tangle. So we begin the ceremony in getting deeper in here with an invocation to the three treasures. The three treasures are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, which are each one of us, our body and mind, our very body and mind. And it's also calling in all the supports in that are unseen and seen to be present here for this ceremony. We invoke Buddha Shakyamuni. We take refuge in his enlightenment, in his example, the fact that of his human life, and that he devoted most of his life, the entirety of his life, for us, that we're actually able to practice the Dharma. And that's our being here today. And for the Buddha nature, we invoke true self nature of the Buddha, awareness itself, the boundlessness and the historical. We invoke the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha regarding our identity with all things, with every single phenomena. And we invoke the Sangha, the treasure of Buddhist practitioners, the treasure of harmony. Since all beings have Buddha nature, for us, all beings are Sangha, past, present, and future. Our lives are dedicated to those we meet, have met, those we may not have met, who are our companions on the path in some way. Sangha is critical because it can reflect things we are missing. We all know this. We used to be called as though we're in a stone tumbler, the sharp edges, and we're getting smoothed out. We do that with each other so we don't bypass anything. We still can, but Sangha really helps us through that. Who does not show or tell us? So, we'll take refuge in, we'll invoke the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And when we rub, that just makes us want to look more closely and express our kindness, our patience, and our vulnerability. I'll do this twice in Japanese in recognition of our lineage, and in English, you repeat that with the liturgist. Everybody, please, gassho. Namo jipo butsu namo jipo ho namo jipo so namo hanchi shakyamuni butsu namo dazi dahi kyu ku kanzeon bosa namo kanju fugen bosa namo daishin manju shri bosa namo koso joyo daishi namo taiso jaisai daishi namo riki dai so shi bosatsu. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with holy Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyo Daishi. Be one with Taiso Joso Daishi. Be one with the great successive great ancestors. Namo jipo butsu namo jipo so namo hanchi shakyamuni butsu namo daisi dahi kyu ku kanzeon bosa namo kanjin fugen bosa namo daishin manjushri bosa namo koso joyo daishi namo taiso josai daishi namo riki dai so shi botsatsu. Sorry, no repeat on that one. And now we'll do the Gatha of Atonement, where there will be a call and response. Let me just say something about this. We'll be saying, all evil karma ever committed by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. So atonement is the gatha of not separating, at-one-ment, not separating, which initiates a state of mind that allows us to enter this rite of passage into other realms, relationships, states of being with an open mind, receptive to a shift in living a compassionate life. So in this, we have to face where we're not compassionate, where we are greedy, where we are angry. If we're wanting to bring forth generosity, compassion, and wisdom, we have to acknowledge where we're not. We have to face it with others, within ourselves, within our world. Otherwise, we cannot do these vows. So this is kind of opening up to a cleaner slate, acknowledging our responsibility for our actions. How do we do this? In particular, with your own, my own, your own hurtful actions, past and present, we come to it in such a way that we take responsibility. That as we live these vows, we continue to address any effects that our actions have or have had and find a way forward. And this allows us to do that. That we continue to practice a life of non-attachment, of non-clinging, recognize we cannot undo the past, yet it can be met in a true way. We can say, yes, this happened, and let that action, whether it's something we did or that happened to us, now that we have our life, and we can understand better causes and conditions, that we can find a way forward. A way to recognize our karma, because actions are based on intentions, particularly the harmful karma we create that arises because of our various states of consciousness, our grasping, our fear, our anger, our pride, our jealousy that causes us to act in certain ways. We usually come by it honestly, but now we're beginning to see how we want to move forward because these things have come to us. And it's created by our thoughts, what we think, what we say, and how we act. It's not abstract or philosophical. It's really where the rubber hits the road. Now I atone for it all. I take full responsibility. I'm not separate from it, regardless of the circumstances, which can be quite hard at times. We're adverse to taking it in, and it makes it very difficult to live these vows. My actions belong to me, your actions belong to you. That's what we're taking responsibility for. Right? From I am the inheritor of my actions. That's what moves forward in life. So this you will be repeating. If everyone will gassho, it's okay. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old
on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless
greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it
all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma
by me since of old on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone.
Next we'll do shasui, which is the aspurging. And this is done with mountain water, comes from the reservoir up by the monastery down to New York City, out of our faucets. So right from the womb of the mountain down to Brooklyn and Brooklyn pine sprig. This is not a purification. Everything is already pure. But rather, it's a recognition of the mind-to-mind transmission between teacher and student. The mind of Buddha passing all the way down to this time and place. Ping. And now we can take refuge in the three treasures. And this is the beginning of receiving the precepts. Without the three treasures, it is not the Buddha Dharma. I already spoke to it a little bit. Not the Buddhist path. The Buddha Dharma is a path to seeing and realizing our Buddha nature, that we are essentially already what we are, what we are seeking. We are complete. That's what the Buddha said, perfect and complete, lacking nothing. It is not something we possess or can possess. We are. We already are. It's the very nature of all beings, of all things. Every aspect of this Buddha mind is not separate from anybody or anything. It's all awakened nature. It may not look like it, but that's the way, that's the shift, right? You begin to see in this way. Continue to deepen that. We can't possess it because we can't even get hold of it. It is boundless. It's not a thing, yet it's everything. Do I contradict myself? So I contradict myself. So kie, which is chanted, is to unreservedly throw yourself into the three treasures, into this trust. Rely upon this, even though we may not have realized it completely. Utter faith and trust in your Buddha nature through whatever you go through. Utter trust and faith in your Buddha nature. It's an ongoing practice. This non-possessiveness of the three treasures of these precepts of everything is of particular importance, not only because it's in alignment with reality, but because it helps protect us from self-righteousness. And that we can become very dangerous when we're dealing with moral teachings, moral precepts, this is always a possibility to become self-righteous. Refuge is whole body and mind commitment to unified mind. So we'll take refuge in the three treasures. Everybody, please, Skasho. I'll do it in Japanese in the beginning and the end, and you will respond in English. Namo kiye butsu, namo kiye ho, namo kiye so, kiye butsu mujo san, kiye ho rujan san, kiye ho waga san, ke bukyo, ke ho kyo, ke so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the
Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha. Namo kiye butsu, namo kiye ho, namo kiye so, kiye butsu na mujo san, kiye ho ryun san, kiye so wagon san, kiye bukyo, kiye hukyo, kiye so kyo. Will you maintain the three treasures?
I vow to maintain the three treasures.
One full bow. Next, you'll receive the three pure precepts. These are the three root precepts, the basis of Buddhist morality, to not create evil, practice good, and actualize good for others. These pure precepts address the questions, how does an enlightened being experience the world? How does one's heart turn towards the day? I will not create evil. I will practice good. I will actualize good for others. So these precepts are, in one sense, very simple. Everyone can understand them because we are this. And I can say pretty much for sure, most likely, you will spend the rest of your days examining them, practicing them, and realizing them. They will never be fatigued, although you may be fatigued. And then we just take another step. We start again. So with the precepts, all of the precepts, we start again. If we find ourselves having gone off, we start again. We're always at the beginning again. And I will read, we'll take the three pure precepts, and I will read Dogen's comment, Master Dogen's comment, after each. It's okay. The first of the three pure precepts is to not create evil. Do not create harm. This helps us to understand there is no harm or evil that exists in the world on its own. There is no force, no entity, no being that is this. We are the source of our harm is our mind, our consciousness. We are the creators of all that is harmful, which is good to know, because this means we are in an excellent position to not create harm. This is most important. It's the first precept because it is the essential precept. Really, we don't need anything further. We could take refuge in the Buddha and not create harm. That's it. Practice that. But we have more because we need more help. This is where it all begins. Everything else flows from this. Dogen said, "This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. It is the very source of all Buddhas. Do not create evil. Will you maintain this?"
I vow to not create evil.
The second precept is to practice good. Good too is this way. It doesn't just exist in the world. We can think that the world is a place that is good, that the world is a beneficent place, but that's our mind bringing a value to the world. Good in itself has no inherent existence. The sense of good depends on your mind. So this too is good to recognize. It means we can bring this forward. We can practice good. This is the realm in which we live and what practice is about. Practicing good is to bring forth good. Just that. Bring forth good. Practicing good intentionally gives you no object, no time, no space, no place, which is really saying every time, every object, every place, practice good. Practice good. Dogen says, it's the Dharma of Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Gosho, it's okay when you're receiving precepts. It's the Dharma of Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, complete, unexcelled enlightenment. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
You see how much they have to do with their body. Part of it. It makes us more humble. My teacher, when we used to get into little, if it was a rough argument with someone, he would have us do 108 bows with that person in the Buddha hall in front of an altar. It changes you for sure. And so the next grave precept, the third precept, you should remember. The third precept is to actualize good for others, to ensure that the good that we're practicing is directly affecting others, bringing benefit into their lives, helping to alleviate suffering. We vow to actualize good for others. Dogen says this is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy. This is to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
Being pure, we're not defiled ever, but due to our conditions, we learn things that aren't so helpful. So, you can sit back for a moment. So we now have set the ground even further to receive the 10 grave precepts to guide us to fully understand how we go about practicing these pure precepts to not create harm, to practice good and actualize good for others. How do we cease from harm? Practice good. Something. Okay. Within the human realm, we do need to pay attention to that which cuts across space, time, culture, periods in time, and harmful action. I'm not sure what I meant there. Let me look at that again. Anyway, the 10 grave precepts point us to those things that either because of the impact of one single action have such an effect that we should commit to not committing that action, or because the actions are so subtle and so frequent and in that can seem so unassuming that we don't notice their impact in terms of how they create suffering for ourselves and others. So the whole of the precepts are pointing to a whole range of actions. And we went through the different ways of understanding these precepts from three different perspectives. And in the Mahayana, it's not black and white, right? So sometimes we will kill to save a life, even though it says affirm life, do not kill. So we have to see what our intention is and how we're acting out of that, out of compassion, if we are. So the grave precepts are more detailed account on how the bodhisattva lives the pure precepts, how we take refuge. So the first grave precept is to affirm life, to not kill. This is based in the principle of non-harming, and it's recognizing that all of life is a result of karma and conditions. As such, it has its own place, own role to fulfill in this world of interdependence. To rob that life is to take away that opportunity, particularly within the human realm, because with human consciousness, we have the potential to do so much good towards all of life. To not harm, to not kill, to affirm life is just to recognize that. Not just to recognize that, but to live within that. That everything perfectly covers the ground on which it stands, has its own fulfillment, its own virtue. This is also about not harboring the mind of killing. It refers principally to life, but also to all forms of killing. Killing time, killing energy, killing opportunities, taking the life away from anything or anyone, including yourself. Dogen teaches, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Affirm life, do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
Let me sit back for just a second and I'll explain. Thank you. The second grave precept is to be giving, to not steal. This precept brings us to the mind of grasping, of possessiveness. The nature of desire is to accumulate. A grasping mind never has enough or has too much. It's like the embodiment of the hungry ghost. To steal, to take that which does not belong to us, is to strengthen and manifest that grasping mind. This precept points us to not seeking contentment in things, in superficial pleasures, in power, titles, positions, in all the things that we want to have and possess. It's bringing forth the mind of generosity, the great magnanimous mind of a Buddha. Here we are cultivating a mind free of attachment, free of an idea of insufficiency, that we are somehow not complete. So to not seek things outside of yourself. Dogen teaches, The mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving, I will not steal.
Thank you. The third pure precept is to honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. We can think of this as honoring the whole person, your whole person and any person, your whole being, the person which is physical, mental, emotional, intellectual, historical, interdependent, and interpenetrating. In the human realm, it is a very particular place within us, our sexuality. It has the force to bring us closer, creating intimacy, to express love, trust, caring. It can also be destructive. We all know this. Like any great power, if we don't wield it carefully, it can create deep wounds. It can heal deep wounds. It can separate our body and mind. It can bring together our body and mind. This precept is about not separating ourselves from another or from ourselves. You're honoring the body. It's not to objectify. It's to honor the whole person and cultivate deep trust and faith in ourselves and others. This precept applies to all of us, whether we're in an intimate relationship, whether we're young or old or celibate. Dogen teaches, the three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I will not misuse sexuality.
Can we do that again together?
I will not misuse sexuality.
Wow, that's a rough one, isn't it? As soon as we put the word sexuality in there, everyone gets blah, blah. Okay, one. Honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I vow to honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
One bow, please. The fourth great precept is to manifest truth, do not lie. This is a very essential precept because our whole path is one of discovering and living the true nature of things. This precept is encouraging us to have the courage to be truthful, to face truth, whatever that is for you. This precept is encouraging us to not turn away from what is real, but to turn towards it, to seek it, to seek what is true, to want to be all in with that which is true. To live without deception is a life without regret, living lightly, gracefully, straightforwardly. It's to inquire what we are believing about ourselves and about anything, which is so much harder than it sounds, to manifest truth and to not lie. Dogen teaches, the Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there is neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth, do not lie. Will you maintain this?
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
So one of the many things we did discuss is that these precepts are not fixed rules, and that there's, as I said, several ways of understanding them, always based in selflessness. One is literally, at all times and all situations, tell the truth. Just, that's it. Do not lie. But if we affix to that as a rule, then we become dead. We're not attentive to the moment, and we won't see that there are certain situations in which that would cause harm. The second perspective is out of compassion and reverence for life, when it might be necessary to not be truthful and to only do that for out of compassion. And in that way, we are actually maintaining the precept. So we need to be really clear that what we are doing is only for that purpose, out of compassion. We spoke about this, and not just to let ourselves off the hook. And that last perspective is that there is no one to lie. There are no lies. The fifth precept is to proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Just put your hands in Gassho. When we practice and encounter the Buddha mind, the luminous mind, the radiant mind, then all the ways in which we cloud the mind, the ways that had and seemed to bring us pleasure or entertainment or take us away from ourselves, begin to dim in their pleasure, in their enchantment. The more we practice, the more we see that clouding the mind, hopefully, is less and less interesting, less compelling, because we see the results, the effects. From a Buddhist perspective, the moment of cloudiness, such as with a drink or drugs, allows us to become lost to ourselves, and we can say things and do things that last long beyond the moment and that we regret and that causes harm. And this precept also recognizes that we put ourselves in precarious circumstance internally at the moment of intoxication, no matter what it is. It's also pointing to the fact that when we are seeking to cloud the mind, we are really seeking to turn away from something difficult, from some pain. And now we have to look at what are many different forms of clouding the mind. Dogen says, proceed clearly. Oh, the mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I vow to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
Got a Charlie horse. Woo. Okay. Oh, there it goes. That just locked up. It's part of the pleasure of a slanted floor. The sixth grade precept. Just put your hands in Gassho, is to see the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. You notice that several of these precepts have to do with coming out of our mouth. Here's a precept that all of us fall into. The key is, when necessary to speak of others' errors and faults, do so out of compassion. We need to sometimes bring things forward that people are doing, but when does it turn into gossip? When does it turn into ill will and be hurtful? So do not speak of others in faults. See their perfection and speak in such a way. Be skillful. Don't do it with, when it turns into ill will, you'll recognize there might be enjoyment in speaking and how you're speaking about someone and their faults. In other words, without any ill will, see their perfection. See the person, see the Buddha, and then we can see errors and faults, just as that, without conflating the two. When we think in terms of absolutes, you're all good or all bad, your practice is perfect or it's a hypocrisy, that is tyranny speaking. So Dogen teaches that it is in the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice, not two. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. See the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to speak of the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
The seventh grave precept is to realize self and other as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. This is touching on another way of using speech, which all of us are familiar with, where we feel badly about ourselves, perhaps, and we find someone else as a target to point out something about them in order to feel better. It's very simple. It's very ordinary. And it's creating suffering. It seems easier to point outward than that should be a signal to take a good look at ourself without blame. When there's no self-clinging, we're no longer seeking to be uplifted by praise. We're no longer avoiding or crushed by blame. And then we can cease from seeking comfort and elevating the self and blaming others. In self and others one, we recognize that each person is complete, living within their causes and conditions, making their choices, taking responsibility to the degree that they do. And this is where we meet. We too are the same way, doing the best we can. It points to the fact that nothing we see in another does not exist within us. Everything we see in others are within us to different degrees, different expressions, but each of us is the universe, the same universe. In a sense, this precept is saying, stay in your own seat. Stay in your own lane. Dogen teaches, Buddhas and ancestors realized the absolute emptiness and realized the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there is no outside or inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there is not even an inch of earth upon which to stand. Realize self and other as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and other as one. I will not elevate the self and blame others.
The eighth grave precept is to give generously. Do not be withholding. So to not steal is to not take what doesn't belong to us, the mind of acquisition and possessiveness. This precept points to having and not wanting to release. Be generous. Do not be withholding. To have something that could help someone, something material or non-material, and not wanting to, feeling that somehow if we offer that, we will have less. Just to examine this carefully. It's really pointing to the mind of stinginess and grasping. It recognizes that when we hold on, we've already lost whatever we want to preserve. When you let go, the world becomes more abundant. You become more abundant. You become more expansive. In this way, as the Buddha said on many occasions, a blade of grass, a word, a gesture, an expression, a penny has the power to bridge a gap, to offer and heal. This precept and all of the precepts are about living a life based on generosity. Dogen teaches one phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors, the universe itself. Since the beginning, there has never been anything to withhold. Give generously. Do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
The ninth grave precept is to actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Anger is one of the three poisons, has a tremendous force. When it is not based in self-clinging, it has the power to do good. So there is a fierceness that anger can bring forth that can precipitate change, can heal, can awaken, but it also recognizes that more often it is more in the destructive realm. It helps us to examine our own mind that is in conflict, the mind of dukkha, and to learn how to not be afraid of anger. It's an energy. First, how we can tolerate it within ourselves and others, and then how within anger to manifest compassion. Not so easy. This is most important, how to manifest compassion within anger itself. To recognize that accepting that would seem unacceptable is not passivity, but actually frees us to respond, to act, to practice. Anger can be practiced as a deep form of compassion for another, for the world, for the self, for the body, for a family, for our ideals, all vulnerabilities, and all of those possibly about to be hurt. Stripped of physical imprisonment and violent reaction, anger energy is the purest form of care. The internal living flame of anger always illuminates what we belong to, what we wish to protect, and what we are willing to hazard ourselves for. What we usually call anger is only what is left of its essence when we are overwhelmed by it, when it reaches our body's incapacity to hold it. This precept is not saying don't ever be angry, but it's more as don't indulge anger so that it overwhelms you. Don't become lazy with anger. Understand the power of anger, examine it, and when necessary, be clear to use it wisely. Dogen says, it is not regressing, it is not advancing, it is not real, it is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean and there is an ornamented cloud ocean. Actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony. I will not be angry.
Go to it, Buddhas. The 10th grave precept is to experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. To defile is to want to injure, to harm, or to destroy. It places ourselves outside. So this takes us back to the beginning. Don't destroy the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, yourself. This is not to turn against your own home, your natural mind, to take refuge and practice the three treasures and to realize that they are life itself. They give you life. They give each of us life. And in this way, they give others life. To not defile them and therefore to experience the intimacy of things. Get close. Dogen teaches, living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. all virtues return to the ocean of reality from which they arise. Do not comment on these precepts, but practice them. In other words, don't turn them into abstractions in your mind. Embody them. Practice them. Make them real. Actualize them. Experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
Stay choky. These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts were handed down from Shakyamuni Buddha to my teacher, to me. Now I give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Three vows. It was short. It's a long one. Yeah. The Buddha's robe. You have to help me put it on behind you. The Kechimiyaku, the lineage of ancestors, the lineage of women ancestors. This is to certify that Ajay Chandra, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 21st day of April 2024 receive the 16 precepts of the Buddha way, lineage chart, lineage of ancestors, Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Shinyu, Pucho Hojin preceptor. Buddha's robe. This is a miniature version of the kesa. Can you help me with it? The lineage of ancestors. The women's lineage of ancestors. This is to certify that Holly Meshing, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 21st day of April, 2024, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, lineage charts, Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name, Bukhe. Pucho Hojin, preceptor. Buddha's robe. I have to kind of straighten it out. The lineage of ancestors. The women's lineage of ancestors. This is to certify that Louis Procaccino, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 21st day of April, 2024, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, lineage charts, Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name, Baisei. Purcho Hojin, preceptor. Three bows. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. Now the Jisha will lead, since we can't walk completely around the Zendo, these recipients will bow to you, the Sangha, for holding them responsible for their vows and for your support. So please feel this. You can return their vows. You sit down. So I'll just, you can relax now. I'm sure you've been through the whole thing, very relaxed. I'd like to say a little bit about your names. Shin Yu is your name. Shin is faith, trust. And Yu is mystery, mystical. Trust and faith in the mystical, the mystery. What is hard to grasp. Trusting what cannot be precise is immeasurable. You can't measure the mist. Mist that arises, the mountains are there, but not seen. Letting go totally to that mystery. To have faith in what is deep and indistinct. When you are in the mist, the ineffable trust, you are getting wet without even knowing it. Can you trust the mist when you can't see the path? Shin Yu. Holly, your name is Bouquet. Bu means dance, or dancing wildly. And K is lightly, lightness, not heavy. Dancing lightness itself, offering little resistance, not making it heavy, being lightness itself in the midst of the dance of your life. How do you dance lightly in impermanence, in causes and conditions, dancing without deceptions, having courage to face the truth, living gracefully and straightforwardly. Bouquet. Lou, your name is Baisei. Bai is fostering or cultivating. And Bai, this character Bai, contains the character for earth, touching the earth, cultivating the earth. Lou's a gardener. And Sei is star. It's the morning star. Cultivating, the morning star is cultivating enlightenment. It also has the character heart in it for awakening. So to cultivate your awakening is to tend the soil, tend the earth, tend your everyday life, adding to nutriments, making it rich and nourishing, aerating it with air, removing heavy rocks or any obstacles, pulling weeds. How do you cultivate the heart of awakening, the bright star in the morning? Baisei, cultivating the morning star. And these names are given as both what the person might possess or have, are, and where they could use a little work. They're also practice oriented. These are words from Daito Roshi to you. When the true Dharma eye opens, everything is realized as one. When the Dharma eye opens, one is realized in everything. When the true eye functions, it clears away all discriminating thoughts and allows us to see the true Dharmakaya, the absolute nature of the universe. When the Dharma eye functions, it creates a clarity that allows us to realize that nothing in the universe is hidden. Everything is just as it is and is revealed. The true eye is the eye of wisdom, the diamond sword of Manjushri Bodhisattva, which cuts through all illusions. The Dharma eye is the eye of compassion, the unconditioned love of Samantabhadra, Avalokiteshvara, working for the alleviation of suffering. Everyone has these two eyes, as does the Buddha. When we open these two eyes, we realize Buddha mind. When we realize Buddha mind, we see for ourselves that self-nature and Buddha nature are not two, but one. This is the treasury of the true Dharma eye, Shobo Genzo. So in the presence of everyone here, you've committed yourself to these vows. That is not a small thing. And at the same time, it's a simple thing. And at the same time, it's not a thing. It's just an everyday thing. It's something you are perfectly suited to do. With these vows, your practice and your life will change in ways that will continue to unfold and surprise you. What was that? That slogan, be surprised, don't be so predictable. May they illuminate your life, and may they bring illumination to the lives of others. May your life go well.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.